Chapter 2, Part 4 of War on Waste Innovation Encyclopedia. Vision. One definition of vision is a point of view about a likely or desired future of the industry. It might be a perception of how the organization will function in this projected future. It would look at the company's focus, strategies, value, culture, competitive position, and its competitive advantages. Another dictionary defines vision as the ability to perceive something not actually visible. The CEO has to be able to create the vision for the company. He needs to have a clear view of the business and move it to a higher plane to create the vision. The CEO needs to look at the market, at the current customers, suppliers, and partners, and at employees and business processes. If the view is not clear, he will create a vision that is a pipe dream and not a possibility. The ideal vision for a company is one that looks into the future, and the employees and everyone involved should be able to see that the vision defined by the CEO is attainable. It may be a stretch, but it is attainable. There aren't many CEOs who run businesses with a clear vision. One CEO, however, who manages a small manufacturing division of a very large manufacturing conglomerate, has a clear view of his customers, suppliers, employees, and business process. He keeps activities in the business focused on achieving his vision for the company. He knows that his vision is a stretch of the company capabilities, but it is achievable with a strong focus. His vision is very simply to be the company the customers will come to because we deliver rapidly against their aggressive requirements. And his method of focusing everyone was, we will achieve our vision by improving all of our internal processes and by reducing product cycle time. All process improvements will lead to an increase in revenue per employee. This guy has it. His vision has worked its way into everybody's thinking about what to do next. It becomes easy to decide which products had the highest priority by their consistency to his vision statement. It's simple. If a project would reduce cycle time, but it required more people to do the job, it wasn't as likely to get funded as a project that recommended a reduction of cycle time and reduced the number of people needed to do a job. The concept is clear to the employees. Employees know that when they have an idea to buy a piece of equipment, its cost must be justified based on productivity improvement. Chalking the field. When I was growing up, my family lived in the country, and we had a field that the neighboring farm kids and I could use to play baseball. We didn't have chalk lines to mark the field, but we had things just as good. We had the old redwood tree that was a dead totem out in one of the farmer's fields, and we had the edge of the barn. That was the first baseline. The third baseline was the fence post and the tree in the corner of the field. Of course, home, first, second, and third bases were cow pies. Not fresh ones, of course. So when we played a game, things went pretty smooth until a questionable foul ball got everyone in a tither and issues arose. Eventually, the issue was resolved and the game continued. I mentioned this as the foundation to what I call chalking the field, because when my kids were playing baseball in a totally organized life of the city kid, they needed chalked fields to play baseball. If I were to take them to an empty field, they would not be creative initially, but they would have figured it out how to chalk the field on their own if they wanted to play a game. If you don't have chalk lines, you have to agree on a different approach, and then they would come up with the same things we did many years earlier. They did that because they needed boundaries and rules to play the game. What was a fair ball? Who calls strikes? And so forth. We do a similar thing in business. There are rules that define each job. but there aren't necessarily roles to define how the game of winning at the company will be played. Jobs are isolated and metrics applied to the tasks involved. But when you have a group of people working to a common goal of optimized output of the group, they are a team and the rules that define winning need to be made clear. The rules amount to chalking the field. And that is what I mean by this expression. If the general manager, the CEO, or the COO want to get optimum results, they need to engage the team members in a discussion of the work rules for a winning team. Of course, they can dictate that, but that usually gets suboptimal results, or they can just let the people try to put the rules together without any guidance from management. And that is also another prospect for a failure. It should be a management worker effort. So the person responsible for the end result is recommended to be part of the chalking of the field team. And don't forget that you need to keep score. Everyone on a team needs to agree on when a run is scored and when an out occurs. These simple understandings lead to very positive work because no one wants to play a game where the score is not kept and they don't know if they're winning or not. And the score should be posted at the end of the game, daily, so that everyone knows how they did in a particular day. I like my yes-no charts, yes or no, if something happened, because they are simple and let everybody know if they won the game and won it, and they know very quickly. For instance, if the team's goal is zero defects, then at the end of the day, the manager or supervisor can put up a yes-no chart with a simple question, did we work without a defect today? If the answer is no, you put a big red X on the chart as soon as the defect is detected. If at quitting time there is no red X on the chart, then a green zero goes up to indicate no defects. See page 67 in this book for more detail about yes-no charts. We will get to them in one of the subsequent readings. People have complained to me that they didn't like that chart because it put a lot of pressure on them to not let down other team members. I would usually say, like, duh. That's what this is all about. By keeping everyone focused on performing flawlessly for a whole day is tough. So when you start to figure out ways to make it easier, and that is what WOW tries to do. Once they see that it is possible to deliver defect-free products, the employees get excited that they can achieve that goal. It may have been a stretch when they started, but once they put the metrics down and see progress with the goal in sight, that is fun to watch. Eating crow. My definition. The act of having to admit to the world that you were wrong. In the war on waste, it doesn't make any difference. We don't even care that you made a mistake. We have a motto that we use in our training institute for CEOs, CEO University, which says actio or reductio confectio, act, learn, adjust. It serves me well in guiding CEOs. Don't worry about eating crow. Eating crow was all about worrying about whether you were wrong or not. The war on waste is not about worrying about that. It's worrying about getting it right without blame. The CEOs of most businesses have to be in control, and if they make a mistake, they're not in control. For a CEO who managed a company in the previous environment before we introduced Tribal Knowledge Paradigm, the output management philosophy of the war on waste, eating crow was unheard of. It wasn't the macho thing to do. As CEOs begin a war on waste project, they find the training process is very tough on them. One of the better CEOs said that he found the war on waste difficult because when I made him eat crow, I didn't provide ketchup. I never really asked him to eat crow. I never asked any of my CEOs to eat crow. I just asked them to listen to employee ideas, act on them with respect, and when something doesn't go right, it isn't the end of the world. Just fix a problem. Don't blame anyone and get on with it. If they want to eat crow, give them ketchup. Management after the fact. In a conversation with Ray Dolby of Dolby Laboratory, San Francisco, he pointed out an interesting aspect of his management style that has infiltrated Dolby culture. Ray has a number of interesting approaches to management. One of them he terms management after the fact. It is Ray's belief that in his industry, a sales organization has to act with a sense of urgency. So when a salesperson or anyone in a company sends a quote out to a customer, he requires that all such correspondence be made available in a file that he looks at every day. So if a salesman sends a quote out and he is a bit too generous with Ray's money, Ray will see the quote and after the fact discuss the deal with the responsible person. He calls this management after the fact, because he wants people to move with a sense of urgency to get quotes out the door. If problems arise, then he's able to deal with it after the fact. One of the issues that Ray took with me during our discussion was the concept of no blame. He said that management after the fact is looking for guilty parties so that their problems can be corrected. In my early comments, I had made the point that no blame was not concerned with who created the problem. Ray objected because he said that he wants to know who created the problem so that he can correct it with management after the fact. No blame is all about holding people accountable. That's where no excuses comes into the discussion. If you work in a no blame environment, you have to be accountable for your actions. The War on Waste CEO will demand no excuses while the employee invokes no blame. In Ray Dolby's case, the employee needs to be corrected after the fact, knows that Ray is interested in educating people about the proper way to send a quote and how to use his money efficiently. But Ray is smart enough to know from his experiences that if you get into the process of holding up quotes before they leave the company, the sales cycle will be dramatically impeded. In sales, you want a sense of urgency. And so he doesn't get in the way before the proposal goes out. He does it after the fact. As an aside, the day folder that contains the sales correspondence has an attendant folder that contains copies of all incoming purchase orders. This is important because anyone who has an interest in a new sales orders can interject ideas into the purchase order process to ensure that the orders are processed correctly. For instance, a salesperson may receive a purchase order from a customer and misinterpret the intent of the customer. An interested engineer who knows the customer and who reads the daily purchase order folder will find the error, correct it with the salesperson, and thereby reduce the probability of delivering the wrong order to the customer. A side value of the purchase order file is that employees are able to see who they're getting orders from. And in Dolby's case, it is exciting to realize the range of customers that put orders into Dolby Laboratories, from Disney Studios to Sony. This is the end of Chapter 2, Part 4. If you want to know more about the War on Waste, you can find out about it at thewaronwasteacademy.com or contacting Len Bertain at len@bertain.com. Thank you. See you in the next reading. Bye-bye.